This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy.
What?
Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit us. Shockwall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Mm-hmm. Sharon Lawson Bram? Skidamarinky-dinky-dink?
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-do?
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much, you, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
And welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And, well, Scott, it's not Halloween, but is it? I don't know. What's going on, Scott Criscola?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 442 of the Gold Standard, the mothership. No, it's not Halloween. Maybe weather-wise it's Halloween.
Kind of feels like it.
It's in the 50s right now, so it's kind of brisk, but... tepid late winter, as we can finally tell this winter to go suck it and get
hopefully
into spring. But yeah, no, we are not in Halloween. But if you are new to the Place to Be podcast, welcome, because then this may be the first time you've ever heard us do the show. If you are a grizzled veteran of the Place to Be podcast, like you and
we
I are,
we should have ran them all as PTB classics leading up to this episode.
A big loop. You're very familiar with the show because we literally have done a electronic review twice, and did a written review once, and now we are doing another one again. But
well, and the other
anyway,
ones, in fairness, the other times have been. Well, no, was the first time a live watch the Halloween podcast? I think it was.
Yes, the Halloween we did a live watch
Halloween
2013.
Yeah, it's not, or 12, maybe. I think it might have
12. And then we did...
the Saturday Smith Event Live Watch series.
The Saturday Smith. Yep, we did that. And then we did the written Vintage Vault for it on PlaceBeNation.com.
Yes.
So here we go. And it is now time for us to have more hillbillies. This might be your favorite Piper's Pit ever tonight. We have another colossal jostle.
Yes, the jostling continues.
The jostling continues. We have a couple
and
of
I'm not talking
matches
about the steak dinner you just came from. That sounded like a colossal jostle.
It was. It was not. It was very good. A big crowd. The restaurant down the street here did a in coordination with the Knights did a nice charity dinner where half the funds went into a charitable fund. So it was very nice. It was a good job. Tonight, we are going to be talking about apples, chocolate, bowling balls, hot pepper candies, and all sorts of fun things. For tonight, we continue our jaunt, JR, through 1985. We leave the garden this evening. Actually, we won't be in the garden for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We've got back-to-back shows away from the garden. And we are going to be live on NBC. For tonight, it is the third installment of Saturday night's main event. The air date is November 4th. The recorded date was, do you have it in front of you? I thought
it aired November 2nd.
I mean, aired November 2nd, and it, my bad, November 2nd, but it was recorded what, like the 20?
Yeah, schmock delete his post. I hope you're happy. It was actually recorded on Halloween.
Oh, so there you go. Yeah. Good. I'm glad he did. All right. So, let's dive in. November 2nd, 1985, live or not live from the Hershey Park Arena in Hershey, Pennsylvania. We are slowly moving west. The first one was at the Nassau Coliseum. The second one was at the old Brendan Byrne Arena or the Meadowlands Arena in East Rutherford. And this one is at Hershey Park Arena in Hershey. So here we go. Your announcers are good old Vincent Kennedy McMahon and Jesse the Body Ventura. What do we have for an attendance?
8,000 here tonight.
Hmm.
I'm guessing that's got to be close to a sellout, I would think, right?
Yeah, it's Hershey. Yeah, it's place. Play to the AL. It's not a 8,000 is probably sellout. So, all right, what is our report? Give us the lowdown.
All right, our championship roll call, of course. Hulk Hogan, 647 days into his reign as WWF champion. Tito Santana, 117 days into his reign. The Dream Team, 68 days as tag team champions. And Wendy Richter, 214 days as women's champion. The clock ticking on that one. And we have some dark matches as well, Scott. The Spoiler, her old friend, defeated S.D. Jones. Bob Orton Jr. knocked off Lanny Poffo. King Tonga defeated Moondog Spot, and Pedro Morales knocked off Barrio. Another scuffle between those guys, but there you go. There's your notes.
All right. So, pretty quick. Yeah. Nothing too out of the ordinary. We're in a pretty stable place. So, why don't we dive in with our first match, JR?
All right. Yeah, we waste no time with our opener, but first we kick things off actually with a montage for our first official themed Saturday Night's Main Event, Scott. As we mentioned, this was recorded on Halloween, so very heavily Halloween-themed. We open the show with a quick hit montage with interviews from Bobby Heenan, Hulk Hogan, and Andre the Giant, Roddy Piper, and Terry Funk leading into opening animation. And then we welcome in from Vince and Jesse, mixed in with some B-roll of fans in costumes. I thought they were pretty good ones, too. There was a funny one of Mr. Fuji. That was pretty good.
Yes, I do remember. Yes, it was very good. Yes, I agree.
So everyone in the Halloween spirit here tonight. Vince then takes us back to a recent episode of TV where Terry Funk beat up a ring attendant, Mel Phillips. Gene then chats with Funk and Jimmy Hart in the aisle. Hart says, that was footage. That was TV tricks and special effects, and Funk really didn't do what we saw him do. Funk says there'll be some branding to do tonight on the JYD. We then get video from MSG, Scott, for that wild Funk-JYD brawl we saw a few episodes back that ended with Funk attacking JYD with the branding iron. Gene then chats with the dog, who delivers a quick message of warning to Funk and Hart. Of course, like we said, this feud started all the way back in August and September on various house shows, really came to a head in October. At the taping at MSG on September 23rd, JYD pinned Funk, and after the match, Funk attacked him with the branding iron. So we talked all about that back on our September 85 MSG show podcast. So check that out for more.
Exactly.
So here we are, Junkyard Dog and Terry Funk. Good feud here between the upper mid-card stars, included that hot MSG brawl. Funk is certainly in line for that match and feud with Hulk Hogan, as is referenced here multiple times, both by him and by the announcers. JYD starts hot, tossing Funk into the ring and smacking him around before Terry gets his chaps and shirts off. JYD chases Hart around the ring as the mouth dives underneath to hide, and then JYD crotches Funk on the top rope and shakes him up and down to a big pop. Funk escapes and regroups, stripping down, and then heads back inside for our proper start. Funk slams JYD but misses an elbow, leading to a JYD slam in the ring, and a second slam that sent Funk flying over the top to the floor in a great bump. Funk comes back in, but Dog slams him again and then peppers him with headbutts until Funk gets to the apron to gather himself. Funk comes back in, but Jimmy Hart trips up JYD, leading to Dog chasing him around the ring. Funk tries to ambush the Dog, but JYD turns around and backdrops him on the floor as Jesse rips Dog for picking on Jimmy Hart. Back inside, Funk lands an uppercut and some jabs as he takes control, and then he hooks a sleeper in, but JYD forces the break by getting to the ropes. A moment later, JYD gets a sleeper of his own, but Hart hops on the apron, leading to Dog breaking the hold and yanking him into the ring. JYD pulls at Hart's leg. Funk bops JYD with a megaphone for the win. After the match, Funk tries to brand JYD again, but JYD blocks it and lays out Funk and Hart, and then yanks Jimmy Hart's pants off and then brands his ass as Jesse flips out about what's going on. I thought it was another fun brawl between these two. The crowd was red hot. I thought the pacing was pretty good. Funk is very clearly being set up for a big title feud and push here. It was mentioned before the match, during the match. He gets the win. I went a star and a half, Scott. I think a little notch behind their MSG brawl because it's a little bit shorter, but still a lot of energy. Well, actually, was it even shorter? I don't know, because that one was pretty short. This was, no, this might have been longer. This was 5:16. Do you remember how long that MSG one was?
The MSG one was definitely, let me bring up Graham. I think the MSG one was about the same length, actually, because it was the last match of the show.
I have it right here. That was, actually, no, hang on. That's 3:34. So it was only half of this one.
Yeah.
Well, this one felt shorter, but yeah, not even half, almost half. But yeah, I would say I liked that one a little bit better. I thought this one, I don't know, it just felt like it meandered a little bit more. That one was much tighter. I guess that speaks to the shorter time, but I enjoyed it.
Before we continue, let me do a quick update here. Obviously, we are taped. Where were they really on November 2nd? Let's see. According to – oh, we got Quickie. It's not a lot here for Graham. There were two teams. One team was at the Civic Center in Baltimore. It doesn't have a full card. It just says included Jesse Ventura, Paul Orndorff, Roddy Piper, Hogan, and Bundy. So probably a solid show. And the other team was out in Omaha, Omaha, Nebraska. That card was
– Little League World Series.
Exactly. No, the College World Series.
That's right.
Little League World Series. Williamsport.
That's right.
Jeez. Pennsylvania. Yep, Omaha. Time. Yes, Omaha is College World Series. Hillbilly Jim versus Big John. And created Hillbilly Jim versus Big John Studd, Davey Boy Smith and the Dynamite Kid, the British Bulldogs against Sheik and Volkoff. Mad Dog Vachon was the guest referee. Wait a minute. Wasn't that in Omaha 9 years later when – or 11 years later when Diesel ripped his leg off?
Right.
Is it the same building?
Yes.
Probably same building. The Hart Foundation against the Killer Bees, and then also included Tony Atlas and Corporal Kirshner. Interesting. Seemed like the Baltimore was a better show. Although maybe the Omaha show had better work rate.
Right.
The Baltimore show had the bigger stars. Anyway, that's where they were live on this Saturday night. Fun brawl. I enjoyed it very much. Funk, I feel like – I know he's in line for a title push, but I still feel like he should be taken more seriously. But I guess Junkyard Dog is a good guy to have him with because he's probably the number two, even though Tito's the IC champ.
Yeah, Joey.
Honestly, Dog is probably the number two guy in the company, even more than Andre, only because Andre's just not on as much. But
yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's a pretty big spot for Funk. I mean, if you look at it, he didn't really even have the ramp up. He had like that one match, and then he was right into JYD pretty much. So
yeah,
they were clearly trying to heat him up for the winter for Hogan. Because immediately he's talking about wanting to get a title feud. So that was clearly the plans right out of the gate.
Yes, yes. And this begins a stretch. I mean this is – Dog's been there here, what, year and a half probably? But already you could tell that he's never going to be taken seriously as a title contender in any capacity. So this is almost now the – this begins the stretch of JYD's going to job – but then gets his heat back afterwards stretch.
Right.
I think that happens a lot between now and pretty much when he leaves – you know, almost 3 years later.
Just a guy over enough that didn't need the win per se, but you always wanted him to get a little bit of shine at the end.
Right, exactly. And I think that's what made this feud great, is that Funk could get the win, and then you have him, he has to show a little ass to JYD at the end, but you know Funk is a stud.
Right.
People know who he is.
And it's really more Jimmy that actually got beat up after than even more than Funk.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, that's a good way to use the manager right there, is let him be the one that gets the shit kicked out of him to get the heat back.
Yeah. The whole mooning and all that stuff. Yeah, definitely. So there you go. Terry Funk gets the win. Cheap JYD
what was your
gets
grade
the heat.
On that one. Did you give him?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll give it a star and a half too.
Okay.
I agree with you. I concur with you. Star and a half. Fun little brawl again. Short, but for Science Main Event, you're not going to get much more than probably 7 or 8 minutes, and you know we had a bigger match on the card here, that needed the time. So there you go. Yes. All right. Continue.
All right. We go backstage.
I guess we have plenty of fun and games tonight.
Games. Lots of it. Gene is backstage with a crew getting ready for a pie eating contest. Scott, we have Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth dressed as Tarzan and Jane. Nikolai Volkoff dressed up as Robin. Bobby Heenan as Davy Crockett. Iron Sheik is Batman. King Kong Bundy as Abraham Lincoln. Tito Santana as Zorro, Hulk Hogan as Hercules, Hillbilly, the Hillbillies dressed as the Three Musketeers. I'm sure they had eaten some on the way over as well. And Lou Albano dressed as Julius Caesar. Albano and Bundy then square off in the contest, which is won by Albano, who, after winning, asks for another piece of pie. So there you go. Lou Albano wins the pie-eating contest, Scott. We then head back to the ring for a very special Piper's Pit. The Hillbillies are all waiting out there, sitting on a bench for some reason, as we would revisit the footage from last episode's wedding.
Like they're in lockup or something.
It's so weird. Just sitting on this fucking bench. Like, they couldn't stand. They had to sit on a bench. So we go back to last Saturday's main event to check out the wedding of Uncle Elmer, including the insults from Roddy Piper and Jesse Ventura. Piper and Orton then arrive to booze, and they start right in on the Hillbillies, with Piper calling Hillbilly Jim Mrs. Elmer, which made me laugh. Piper asks Elmer what went on during the wedding night and asks about family planning, but Elmer just keeps saying it's none of his business. Jim finally stands up and gets in Piper's face, and then Elmer calls out Jesse Ventura, saying, "Come down and talk right to his face." Ventura obliges and heads to the ring, saying he called it as he saw it, and he isn't backing down. Orton then sneaks around and hides behind Cousin Junior, and Piper shoves that idiot over in a schoolboy trip. He goes flying over Cowboy Bob. The Hillbillies fire up and chase off the heels from the ring, and then in my least favorite moment in wrestling history, they step on Jesse's hat over and over with that. Like my 4-year-old daughter does that, or 5-year-old daughter does that angry stomp on the ground. Like, I want to fucking just shoot Cousin Junior when I see him doing that. But it's I mean, Piper and Jesse are awesome, but the Hillbillies are just so stupid. I mean, fat asses are sitting on that bench, and I just glued. By the way, we had this discussion last time with Kelly, where you take this anger out on Hillbilly Jim. Still, I don't. I don't count Hillbilly as a true part of the Hillbilly Brigade. It's it's Elmer, it's Junior, it's Cousin Luke, it's Elmer's wife, it's all the fucking animals, like all that shit to me is the Brigade. Hillbilly Jim's not part of the Brigade. He's above it all. So when I call these, when I say these fat shits all sitting on the bench and being stupid, I don't count him. But anyway, they look like idiots sitting on the bench. That was the best part of seeing Junior go ass over fucking head, or tea over kettle.
Ass over tea kettle.
whatever the saying is.
Tea kettle.
Tea bag over whatever. But I mean, that's the tea bag over D'Amato. But that, I mean, that's the, I mean, that's whatever. They fucking suck. And I mean, what do you think of the segment, but what do you think too about Piper being like in a feud with these guys? Like, doesn't it feel so below him? I know he's not truly in a feud, but he kind of is. I mean, is it more to elevate the Hillbillies? It seems like it's just killing time for Piper.
Why do they need elevating? Right. Elevate the bench. They were sitting on a bench for 6-year-olds. It's like, what are you, in kindergarten? It was terrible. Wait, I mean, Piper was there just to just get his jabs in that we all would laugh at. I don't have an issue with the reason I got mad at the last show with when we had Kelly on, was because I thought that there should be a better guy in that tag match than Hillbilly. I feel like he kind of dragged it down a little bit. As a character, I mean, he's the star of that group, if that has any merit to it. But
no, I mean, yes and no, though. I feel like they've kind of pushed Elmer as like the top dog of the group. I mean, Jim got that spot in the jostle, but it feels like he's almost positioned as Elmer's manager at times now.
That's why I wondered why they didn't have Uncle Elmer in that colossal jostle at the Garden with Andre and Elmer again. You had four guys. I mean, fucking Stud would look like a cruiserweight in that match, or a light heavyweight. Yeah. But I mean, it's just so bad. I mean, this is just Vince getting his usual, fucking comedy jollies, because this is just atrocious. However, we are looking at it through 2017 glasses, I guess. I mean, I didn't totally despise.
Why? Were Hillbillies more popular in the 80s? What's the difference? Well, they suck just as much then?
Yeah, I guess so. I think Uncle Elmer and Hillbilly Jim, just the two of them, would have been fine. But do we need the two fucking inbred cousins? I think that's the worst part. Like, they bring
Junior's,
nothing to the table.
No, Junior's useless.
They bring nothing to the table, either of them. If it was just Hillbilly Jim and Uncle Elmer, I could tolerate it. Because at least it gave Piper some good jabs, and Jesse sitting there laughing. Like, I love – you know what I'm going to take credit – not take credit. That's not what I meant. What I'm going to take something out of – I love the byplay with Jesse and Piper. Like, those two – they're like the two jack-off guys in high school. Like it's almost like they're the Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid. Fucking, Jesse's the jock, and Piper's like the smart-ass douche kind of thing. Like, they're just – I love them together. And as Piper, as
I like how Jesse's like not a, like he doesn't. I mean, he, they call him out, and he comes right down. You know, like he's not your typical heel where he might have begged out of showing up or whatever. He just comes down and tells them how much they suck right to their face.
Right. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. Yeah. He's awesome. Absolutely awesome. And I love the combo of Piper and Jesse. And as we,
I mean,
say,
on paper, it's a great feud, right? You got the two like asshole, cocky, douchebag Hollywood guys, California guys, and then you got the, you know, the lovable country bumpkins. I mean, on paper, it's like the perfect feud. It's just that the presentation and usage of these hillbillies is obnoxious.
Hey, you know what? They did an entire Coliseum video on fine country bumpkins.
I wish Elmer's ankles shattered when he did that stomp on the hat. Fat fuck. I wish he just fucking broke his little leg.
You know, I couldn't fucking Junior trip and get a concussion or something. Anyway,
the highlight for me, head on that bench when he flipped over. Knock him
well,
off.
He would have had to fall far because the fucking bench was like 3 inches off the ground. It's like fucking kindergartner sitting on it.
And what, it was like a curb. It was so weird. I don't know. They should have curb stomped his face into the fucking bench.
So bad. But I mean, I'm going to take out of this segment just the awesome combo of Piper.
Yeah, they were great. I mean, the segment itself was fun. The hillbillies are just so fucking hateable. I don't know how anyone could like it. I mean, Vince is this obsession he has with these people. It's like, oh, God. Only Glenn Butler. He's the only person I know that likes the hillbillies.
Much. Now, speaking of big matches, our main event is next, JR. But what do we got in between here? Some interviews?
Well, we go backstage for the pumpkin dunk featuring Bobby Heenan and Cousin Junior squaring off. Junior dusts himself off and makes it backstage in time for the big dunk. JYD's here this time. He's dressed as a mummy. Tito Santana, Savage, and Liz are also there to help out. The contest begins, and Heenan clearly cheats his way to a victory over that dumbass Junior. So, great moment there. Yes. That contest now drawn even, 1-1, heels and faces. What do you think of these contests so far?
They're funny. They're enjoyable. Yeah. I like how the teams just have to be all heels and all faces. Like, you know, it would be cool if it was a mix, but I don't think that would have flowed. Yeah. I think it made the comedy better. But it was fine. I enjoyed that. I love Sheik and Volkoff dressed as Batman and Robin. I think that's pretty funny. Except they say Sheik at S&V on it. I think that's great costume symmetry there. It's not a Batman logo. It's the S for Sheik, and it's not the Robin in R. It's the V for Volkoff, which I think was great. Attention to detail, if you
it
will.
It was nice attention.
So,
to detail.
I enjoyed that. And then, of course, Hogan had to be like fucking Caesar with his big gold fucking chest thing. I mean, Hercules with his gold.
Alberto was Caesar. You should eat some Caesar salads, is what he should be doing.
Yeah, instead of eating too much Little Caesars. But all right, why don't we get to the ring? We got a nice good match coming up.
Yeah, so we head to the aisle. Where Gene is chatting with Bobby Heenan, King Kong Bundy, and Big John Studd. They call out the Dream Team, they say.
Well, they all dressed pretty quick, huh?
Dressed
fast. I don't know.
They're working quick. They issue a warning to Andre and Hogan, who they call the Dream Team. Gene then talks to Hogan, Andre, and Albano, of course, sticking his fat ass in there, who he calls the Dream Team as well. Did you think it was weird that they're using this Dream Team moniker when you have your tag team champions of the Dream Team? I mean, they couldn't come up with anything else besides the Dream Team?
Yeah, I don't get it. The Dream Team, I mean, they're not in the building. I don't think Beefcake was – were Beefcake and – I'm trying to remember. Were Beefcake and Valentine in the crowd of heels? I thought I still remember seeing Valentine.
No, I don't think they were here at all on this show.
No? All right. Well, still, though. I mean, you already have a Dream Team.
They're the champions. It's not like some scrub team. You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
It's an odd – like, they just literally became the Dream Team and just won the tag team titles.
I know. Very
strange. Why would you – cause confusion and call these guys the Dream Team? Like, there's got to be a different name, anything, whatever. Megastars, the Giants of the game. I don't know. There had to be something. They could
America's
come up
team,
with.
And anything. Then they could have
just anything.
Which is funny. I feel like Crockett would end up stealing this in '86 when they tried to make Dusty and Magnum like the big babyface like duo. And
right,
I think
were,
that's
were
what
they
they're
the superpowers?
Here.
And they could have called Hogan and Andre the superpowers. And like, and there had
there
to be so many names possible. Instead of using a tag team, it's like if they call them the Hart Foundation. You know what I mean, it's like this is so stupid; it makes no sense.
There's already a foreign legion, so right. We don't.
Foreign legion.
That's why I said that. Anyway, so yeah, it's just weird that they would use Dream Team when you already have a very good team, actually, tag team.
So now we head to the ring. This match, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant taking on King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd, the result of the challenge from last month's Saturday Night's Main Event. If you remember, Tony Atlas and Andre took on this heel team. Hulk Hogan made the save and put out the challenge. We've seen Andre battling these guys left and right on these MSG house shows, the Colossal Jostle, the Double Colossal Jostle, and now here we are with the Mega Super
double up, quadruple Colossal Jostle.
The bigger, better, badder Colossal Jostle.
The dream Colossal Jostle team. So great continuation of Andre's feud with the Heenan family. Been running through all these partners and comrades before finally finding Hogan. Crowd is red hot, Hogan and Andre, and it's really cool seeing them team up here. Jesse says he's surprised Albano can even walk after slobbering his way through all the pies in the pie eating contest. Hogan and Bundy open things up with Hogan rattling Bundy with a shoulder block and nearly slamming him before buckling back down. Hogan fights off an attack with a big flurry of strikes before tagging in Andre. The boss chokes away at Bundy as Jesse rips the referee for allowing it. Hogan then tags in and lands an axe blow off the middle rope, but Stud is able to grab Hogan from the corner, leading to some double-team strikes. Stud tags in and hits the shoulder block as Jesse rants about Piper's pit and says he's open to stepping into the ring on the next Saturday's main event to team with Piper against the Hillbillies. I like how they keep building the next show now. Like, that seems like it's a theme. Yep. So that's a nice touch. Hogan takes back over, tags in Andre, who unloads chops and punches before accidentally hitting the ref. Everything breaks down into a big brawl with Hogan and Andre cleaning house as a new referee shows up. That takes us to a break. When we returned, Hogan is working over Stud and tags in Andre. Andre controls for a minute but gets tied up in the ropes. Stud and Bundy go to work, double teaming him over until and then crush Hogan with a splash and then punch away at Andre until the referee calls for a DQ. Hogan fires up and he and Andre clean house. I thought this was really cool for a show like this. More of a happening than a match. This is a good way to showcase the top players, have a hook for the show by building it up. But that said, it was really just a squash. I mean, Hogan and Andre didn't really show much at all. They pretty much dominated. We get an indecisive finish, and the heat was great. The match just didn't have much to it, which I thought was kind of disappointing. So, I mean, it was really fun and hot, but disappointing in some ways, too, the way they really hyped it up and built it up and then paid it off so quick. They didn't really give it a ton of time. It went... What's the official time here?
8 minutes even, I think
right,
it was.
Right, 8 even, and that's what the break. I mean, when you got these four guys, they probably could have ticked it up a bit. And I get they're saving it for the house show circuit, so it's fine. But it definitely felt like a bit of a disappointment. But that said, the heat is great. It's a lot of fun seeing Hogan and Andre team up. A real novelty act here. I went 1.5 stars.
Yeah, I'll give it 1.5 stars as well. It was fun. I mean, again, Saturday's main event, you just got to be careful. You can't go in with superior expectations of any kind of, five star work here. Just seeing Hogan and Andre together is pretty awesome. It's a novelty. It's special, regardless of what you call them. I like Stud and Bundy. I think they're a cool team, cool heel team. I just was hoping for, a little more. I mean, 8 minutes is a decent amount.
There's a break in there, though. There's not much to it. So Hogan and Andre just beat the shit out of them. Andre gets tied in the ropes, which was a cool way because he was tied the reverse, right? This time?
Yeah, he was hanging out. He was hanging outside the ring. Yep.
Yeah, so that was kind of neat. And then they splash Hogan. So, I mean, I guess it's more of an angle than anything. I think we just have to understand that for these shows. And we've watched them enough times that we should get it. But it's just disappointing to me, like putting myself in the mindset. We've watched all the build. We've seen all these MSG matches. We got the tease last show. And then they come out here and it's just kind of that. I understand what the format is and what it, what is meant to be, but that doesn't lessen the disappointment.
Right. No, I agree. I was expecting more as well, even with these big guys. So it's kind of like movies, JR. The first Colossal Jostle was awesome. The sequel was pretty solid, but by the time you get to the third movie, and it varies.
What was your
so there you go.
Grade on
the,
that?
Yes. So our tag ends in a schmoz.
What was your grade?
America's grade. I think I said 1.5 stars like okay. You. 1.5 stars. So there you go. The Colossal Jostle, the Colossal America's Dream superpower non-foreign legion team gets the win by DQ.
Got it.
And so there you go. What did you say? Count? It was a count out, you said? Or was it? It was DQ, right?
No, DQ, yeah.
It was DQ. Okay.
For the double team. So then Gene hops in the ring to talk to Andre and Hogan. Andre said he doesn't get enough. He didn't get enough. He calls the boys back to the ring. Hogan said it took two of them, and they still can't beat down the Giant. The two stars shake hands, and Andre issues a challenge to fight Stud and Bundy anywhere in the world. So we're far from over with this one.
I loved Andre. Andre was throwing some fire here. I liked it. Get in the ring. I'm not done with you. He sounded like Nikita Koloff a little bit. I am not done with you. It was really good. I love when Andre gets fired up, like when he, because usually so like docile and quiet, but I love when he gets like actually fired up. It's pretty cool. I enjoyed it. All right, why don't we take a break? We have two matches in, and we are 1-1 in the Halloween competition. What do you think so far, JR? I'm having a good time. It's a fun show.
Yeah, I mean, even though I can recite it at this point, it is a fun one to watch. I mean, there's not many of these I probably could have done like four times like we have, but it's it's a fun watch. You pick up some new stuff every time. And just like Mania 1 and these other shows, it's definitely been added a little of extra interest since we've been watching more of the build and progression of these characters and storylines. So, like, Funk and JYD meant more to me this time. Andre's battle with Heenan meant more to me this time. So it's definitely enhanced watching the show. And I like the theme stuff. I think it was cool that they went that far with it, and they have the competitions breaking up the show. It's not getting monotonous. We had a fun Piper's Pit. And I think it's been a strong first half of this show so far.
Yeah, I think so as well. When we return, we will have two more matches, including another title match, or our only title match of the evening, the Intercontinental title on the line. We also have a tremendous trick-or-treat segment with one of our personal favorites, who pretty much, to me, is the MVP of this show. Then we will break the tie of the Halloween competition. First, though, many words. Some of them in, sloppy pies. Oh, did I just give something away? More after this, because...
Eat that Caesar salad, you fat pig.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Nation, we are back taking a look at our favorite Saturday Night Smith event of all time, the episode from November 2nd, 1985. It is our Halloween episode, and it was the third installment of Saturday Night Smith event. And, you know, Scott, I think back to our relationship all these years, and, you know, for a while there, I feel like we were pretty monogamous, and then we've had these other podcasters come in and other reviewers come in, and I think at best now we're just part-time lovers, you know, and I can't say we're fully committed to each other. And that just happens to be a red-hot song, Scott, because it was number one this week in the nation, Stevie Wonder, Part-Time a Lover. Of course, you hear it under us, and that means it's time for just one thing, and that is Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And as you can see, it moved up one spot from last week to number one. So Stevie Wonder's Part-Time Lover. Moving up two spots to number two is quickly becoming one of JR's favorite little themes, the Miami Vice heme.
Mm-hmm.
The theme from Jan Hammer, the Miami Vice theme. At number three, dropping two spots. She was number one last week, but she'll always be number one in our hearts. The gorgeous Whitney with Saving All My Love for You, even though we're part-time lovers. Number four, moving up a spot. Kelly's favorite song, apparently, from last week, Head Over Heels from Tears for Fears. Dropping two spots to number five, a little aha with Take On Me. Number six, moving up four spots into the top ten, a Eagles solo act, a little Glenn Frey with You Belong to the City. Can you tell? Can you tell that Miami Vice is the hot show because all these songs are on Miami Vice?
There you go. Right.
So there you go. So Miami Vice, of course, one of the big shows on television at that time. So, so there you go. That's why they're all on here. At number seven, Little We Built This City by Starship. Number eight is that Sting song I've never heard of, Fortress Around Your Heart. Number nine is Loverboy with a little Lovin' Every Minute of It. And at number 10, moving up six spots.
Loverboy.
Loverboy is at number nine. They moved up two spots. And at number 10, little ABC with Be Near Me. You may not know this song. You do know their popular song, The Look of Love, which came out probably 3 years before this. So
This is not another bad creation, right? It's a different ABC.
No, this is a different ABC. This is the British pop ABC. So there is your top 10, which came out on this day, this Saturday, November 2nd, 1995. All right. 1995. What was the number one song in 1995 is a song that JR probably loved a hell of a lot better, hell of a lot more than a fucking Part-Time Lover. All right. In the theaters, JR, it's a Saturday, so these movies all came out yesterday. We have six movies that came out, and actually three of them very well known. Very well known, but we'll start with the ones that nobody knows. In sixth place, it made $20,175. It was a documentary, JR. I don't know what the documentary was about, but it was called Shoah. S-H-O-A-H. Shoah.
S-H-O-A-H?
Yes. Shoah.
Are you Shoah? That's what it was?
Shoah, that's what it was, yes.
All right, it's a documentary about the Holocaust. Yep. So
great.
We can probably move along pretty quickly here. But the film primarily consists of interviews and visits to Holocaust sites across Poland, including three extermination camps. So,
it's a real
holiday gem here. It was actually released April 30th, 1985, overseas.
It must be re-released. Okay. Yeah, could you imagine? All right, let's have the pumpkin dunk contest, and then talk to the stars of Shoah. Yeah,
talk to our fans as they exited the movie.
Talk to those that survived Dachau. Yeah, that's good. They don't really care about pumpkin contests.
You are making out at number five, Shoah.
Shoah. At number five, making $235,383. This is a drama. It is called. I'm going to say it, and you're going to type it the way it's supposed to be. Macaroni, not macaroni. It's M-A-C-C-H-E-R-O-N-I. So I don't know if it's like macaroni.
I bet it's about a clown. Let's see.
A clown. It's about a fucking clown.
Spell it again.
M-A-C-C-H-E-R-O-N-I.
Okay. Let's see. Macaroni, an Italian comedy film directed by Ettore Scola. The film was selected as Italian entry for Best Foreign Language Film at the 58th Academy Awards, but was not accepted as a nominee. Jack Lemmon plays a successful, physically exhausted, pill-popping American businessman going through divorce who visits Naples, Italy, Napoli, He spends several days there as a guest of a local business acquaintance played by Marcello Mastroianni, who has more laid-back philosophy and is devoted to his large family. In the process, Lemon's character learns how to relax and live the good life. It sounds like it's a Odd Couple. His other, right? It sounds like it's like the same fucking premise. Jack Lemon, Marcello Mastroianni, Daria Nicolodi, Isa Danelli, Maria Luisa Santella, Patrizia Sacchi, Bruno Esposito, or Cesar Gregorti.
Yes, I like that with a side of ziti, please.
Jean-Francois Perrier, Giovanna Sanfilippo, Aldo De Martino, Tilde Desperto, as the villain's mistress.
The villain's mistress. All right. At number four.
It's in Italian, by the way, in case you want to share.
Yes. this one, okay. Another drama. It made $305,102. It is called Eleni, E-L-E-N-I, which I know is Greek.
A lot of foreign films in 1985.
I know, really.
Yes, it is a 1985 film adaptation of the memoir by Greek-American journalist Nicholas Gage. Not Nicholas Cage. Screenplay by Stephen Tesh. Film stars John Malkovich, Kate Nelligan, Linda Hunt, and Glenn Headley. Film told flashback format with Gage now living in the U.S. returned to his native Greece to solve the mystery of his mother's death when he was a child. It's an exciting week. A lot of uplifting stories. The film looks back to the effect of the 1940s Greek Civil War at a remote Greek village of his upbringing, and he investigates what happened to his mother after communist guerrillas invade the village. There you go. The Greek letters. It's a... Fuck. I used to be good at these. Democratic Army of Greece. I forget if it's Alpha. I don't know. I used to be better at the Greek letters there.
Beta Thai, Beta Chi, Beta Tai. I don't know. Anyway, there you go. All right. The top three are all fairly heavyweights. This is a great one. Oh, you just showed it to me. Yeah, I don't know what that is. No, AT-8? I don't know. Alpha, Theta...
Epsilon?
Epsilon. There you go. That must be it. Alpha, Theta, Epsilon. That's got to be it. All right. The top three are actually pretty well-known movies. At number three, two of them are sequels. At number three, it made $16,116,000. Yes, the third. That's why I said it was fitting. We had a third Colossal Jostle match, and we have a third movie, of a movie series, actually a very popular one.
Cock Robin 2, the cock has emerged.
The cock has risen. At $16,116,800. $878.
Cock Robin 2, the passion of the cock.
Cock Robin 3, Miami Beach. No. Death Wish 3.
All right, let's pull up
so Death Wish. We get a little Charles Bronson action.
Not quite Death like Blow.
The first two Death Wishes are really good. I don't remember the third one, but the first two were actually pretty awesome.
American action film starring Charles Bronson as vigilante killer. Do you remember his name?
What was his name in the movie? I do not remember, no.
Paul Kersey.
Okay, Paul. I remember Kersey. I don't remember Paul.
Paul Kersey has come back to New York City after being banned since the events of the first film to visit his Korean War buddy, Charlie, who was attacked by a gang in an East New York apartment. The neighbors hear the commotion and call the police. Paul arrives and Charlie collapses dead in his arms, and they, of course, arrest Paul for murder. The hijinks ensue from there. Charles Bronson, Deborah Raffin, Ed Lauder, Martin Balsam, Gavin O'Harely, Alex Winter, Marina Sirtis. Alex Winter, isn't that the chick from Modern Family?
Yeah, well, no,
that's her
Marina
name.
Sirtis,
Ariel Winter, that's right. Alex is her name on the show.
And Marina Sirtis was Deanna Troi on Star Trek. Rico, Mr. Butler.
Rico Ross, Barbie Wilde, and Manning Redwood.
Rico Ross! Tell me that doesn't sound like a jobber. Jim Neidhart's taking on Rico Ross tonight here at the Spectrum.
There you go.
All right. At number two, making $17,307,019 action film. I think it was about the coke trade of the 80s, To Live and Die in L.A. And there was actually a song on the soundtrack called To Live and Die in L.A.
All right, let's pull that up. American action thriller film directed by William Friedkin based on a novel by a former U.S. Secret Service agent, Jared Petovich, who wrote.
By the way, William Friedkin directed The Exorcist, incidentally, as well.
Richard Chance and Jimmy Hart are United States Secret Service agents assigned as counterfeiting investigators in the Los Angeles field office. Jimmy Hart. Chance has a reputation for reckless behavior, while Hart is 3 days away from retirement. Who would have believed it? A lone heart stakes out a warehouse in the desert, thought to be a print house of counterfeiter Rick Masters. After Masters and Jack, his bodyguard, kill Hart, Chance explains to his new partner, John Vukovich, that he will take down Masters no matter what. So there you go, the story there. William Peterson is Richard Chance. Michael Green is Jimmy, Mouth of the South Hart. William Defoe is Eric Masters. Christopher Alport as Max Waxman. Some great names in this movie.
Max Waxman.
John Pankow. That sounds like a Simpsons, like a made-up character. John Pankow is John Vukovich. Jack Whore is Jack. Deborah Feuer is Bianca Torres. Valentin
I think the motto is used that at hotels. I think he's used it under the name Jack Whore.
And Max Waxman. Valentin de Vargas as Judge Philo Cedillo. John Turturro as Carl Cody. Dwyer Brown as the Doctor. Dr. G, Uptown Girl, as Jordan Duncan would say. Darlene Flugel as Ruth Lanier. Michael Chong as Thomas Ling. Dean Stockwell as Bobby Grimes. Gerald Petovich as Special Agent. Steve James as Jeff Rice. Robert Downey Sr., a rare appearance, as Thomas Bateman. And Jane Leaves as Serena. Of course, Jane Leaves would become...
Daphne.
Yes.
On Frasier.
Yep. That's right.
Love Daphne. All right. And the number one movie of the weekend is actually one of my favorite movies of all time. It made
$21,163,999.
The Smurfs. No. A Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 2, Freddy's Revenge. Great movie.
All right. Let's pull it up. Nightmare on My Street. American slasher film, second, of course, in the series, directed by Jack Sholder. Mm-hmm. 5 years after Freddy Krueger's apparent defeat, the Walshes, Jim and Cindy and Brandon have moved into the Thompson's former home. Teenage son Jesse, I don't remember any Jesse. Well, I guess he was married to Andrea, right?
That's right.
A nightmare about being stalked by a killer on a school bus. He wakes up and attributes the dream to the unusual heat in the room. Jesse goes to school with his friend Lisa Turtle, whom he's interested in romantically, but she's too shy to flirt with. After getting into a fight with a boy named Grady during gym class, Coach Schneider makes him stay after class and they become friends. Lisa comes to visit Jesse Spano after school, and they discover a diary from Nancy Thompson detailing her nightmares, which are strikingly similar to Jesse's. Small fires happen around the house, blah, blah, blah. Freddy Krueger shows up and they all die. Mark Patton, Kim Myers, Robert England, of course, is Freddy Krueger. Robert Russler, Clue Gulager, Hope Lange, Christy Clark, Marshall Bell, Melinda Ophie, Tom McFadden, Sidney Walsh.
A great movie.
$29.9 on a budget of $3 million.
Yep, budget of $3 million. This says $21 million, but we'll take that. Maybe the overseas was the extra $8 million.
U.S. and Canada.
All right. So there is your six movies that came out the day before. So all right, JR.
For Freddy, right?
What's that?
I said good timing for Freddy Halloween. Did they always come out on Halloween?
In the beginning they did, and then by like the early '90s they just put them out in May, like you know with the Memorial Day movies, which made no fucking sense. But anyway, they were battling. I mean, at this point, by 1985, pretty much Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street were battling for this time of the year in the box office because Halloween was kind of on hiatus after the third one came out in 82 and the next one wouldn't come out for a couple of years. So it was pretty much a battle between Freddy and Jason for the...
we find out when they fought in that movie.
That's right. That wouldn't be for another 18 years. All right, let us time now. We leave the movie theater, JR, and you know what we're about to do. Let's take the field. It is week 9 of the 1985 NFL season. Let's dive in, shall we? All right,
yeah,
JR.
I did pretty well last
is...
time. What did I get? Only two wrong, I think, right?
I think you only got two wrong. Remember, back then, no buys, so full slate of games. We got 14 games here. And, of course, the games were all played the next day and then the one Monday night game. We begin at Fulton County Stadium, where Chad Campbell, little boy, as his Falcons host the Washington Redskins.
I will take the Hogs.
Correct. Comfortably, 44-10.
Can't believe the Falcons lost that game.
Yep. Let's go to Foxborough, where the Patriots host the Miami Dolphins.
I'll take Marino, pissing all over the Pats.
Steve Grogan with 188 yards passing. Craig James with 119 yards rushing. Pats win 17-13.
Fucking unbelievable.
Let's go up to Orchard Park as the Bills host Boomer, Ken Anderson, whoever the hell's playing. Actually, it is Boomer playing. And the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'm going to take the Bengals here on the road.
The Bengals win 23-17. Boomer threw for 193. Let us go to Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh, one of the best rivalries ever. Maybe not now, but the Steelers host the Cleveland Browns.
Well, Steelers, I think we're a little bit down in this period. I'm going to take the Browns. This is their heyday.
Steelers win 10-9, a dreadfully boring game. As Bernie Kosar led the passing with only 96 yards.
Oh,
it must have fucking snowed or something. Let us go to the Superdome. I'm sorry, the Metrodome. I'm pulling a Hogan.
Come on, Hogan.
Yeah. Let's go to the Metrodome in Minnesota where the Vikings will host the Detroit Lions.
I will take the Vikings.
Vikings win on a field goal, 16-13. Doing well. Let's go from one dome to another. The Astrodome in Houston, the Oilers. Hosting the Kansas City Chiefs.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, this is what I think about when I think of 80s AFC. I'm gonna take Houston hold serve at home.
Oilers win 23-20. Very nice. Let us go now to from the uncomfortable indoor stadium to frigid. I mean, might have been frigid early November. Lambeau Field in Green Bay as the Packers host the Chicago Bears.
I will say the Packers were a doormat for the Bears, as they usually were during this time period, and Chicago won.
The Bears won 16-10. There we go. Let us go to the Meadowlands, where the New York football Giants will host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I will take the Giants comfortably in this one.
They do win, but not comfortably. Only 22-20. Joe Morris rushed.
Just shit as usual.
Joe Morris rushed for 132 yards. Let us go out to Jack Murphy, the Murph, where the Chargers host the Denver Broncos.
Ooh, that's a good one right there. Fouts and Elway. I'm going to take the Broncos.
Fouts throws for 302 yards. Chargers win comfortably, 30-10. Let us go out to Anaheim Stadium, where the Rams will take on the New Orleans Saints.
The Rams there.
Rams win comfortably, 28-10. To the Hoosier Dome we go, and the Jets, Jets, taking on the Colts.
Here's my lead pipe lock of the week. I'm going to go with the Jets.
Freeman McNeil with 149 yards rushing. Jets win 35-17.
Lock it up.
Lock it up. Don't you wish you had Freeman McNeil now? let us go to the Stick, Candlestick Park in San Francisco.
I'm not big on McNeils right now.
Yeah. The defending world champion 49ers taking on the piece of crap Philadelphia Eagles.
I will take the Niners in that one.
Even though Ron Jaworski threw for 394 yards.
All garbage time.
Yep, it is, because they only scored 13 points. Niners win 24-13. It is garbage time, just like their whole team. Let us go to the Kingdome in Seattle, where the Seahawks host the Raiders.
I will take them Oakland Raiders.
First of all, they weren't in Oakland. They were in L.A.
I will take them L.A. Raiders.
And they got blown out anyway. 33-3, the Seahawks win. Jesus. And on Monday night, from Busch Stadium in St. Louis, the Cardinals host your Dallas Cowboys.
I will take, I'll take the Cardinals at home on Monday night.
The Cardinals did indeed win at home, 21-10.
Boom, 10-4, baby.
Not
red
bad.
Hot, red hot this time period.
Not bad at all. Very good, very good. All right, we will go from pro to college. We'll take a look at the top 10. And the number one team in the country went down. Number one, Iowa, loses in Columbus at the Horseshoe to number 8, Ohio State, 22-13. Who will be the number one on Monday? Probably Florida. The second-ranked Gators beat number 6, Auburn, 14-10. I think Bo Jackson, 85. I think that's the year he won the Heisman. But they lost. Auburn
was Elway pro yet? By the way, I said Elway before. Was he there yet?
Yes, he was. Yeah, he was a pro because 83 was the draft with that's all right. the bullshit okay. that went on. Yeah, no, he was there. Third-ranked Penn State beat Boston College 16-12. Fourth-ranked Michigan and Illinois play to a 3-3 tie.
Oh, God.
How brutal. Fifth-ranked Nebraska blows out Kansas State 41-3. Seventh-ranked Air Force beat San Diego State 31-10. Ninth-ranked Oklahoma crushed Kansas 48-6. And 10th-ranked Florida State loses to number 11 Miami 35-27. On the frozen pond on this day, 9 games, your winners, the Bruins, Flames, the Kings blew out the Whalers 8-1. The Jets win, Penguins and Canadians play to a tie, Devils beat the Rangers in overtime, Islanders win, the Flyers beat the Nordiques, Blues and Red Wings play to a tie, and the Sabres lose to the Canucks in Vancouver.
Big weekend for teams named Jets.
That's right. And guess what, JR? It is the start of the NBA season. There are a few games in. 10 games on the docket. The things of note, we won't go crazy. Mark Aguirre had 42 points. Dallas beat Sacramento 119-113. Let's see. Kareem had 31. The Lakers beat Golden State. Patrick Ewing in his rookie season with a double-double, 27 points, 11 rebounds. But as par for the course early in his career, the Knicks sucked, and they lost in L.A. to the Clippers 103-95. The Nets, they sucked as well, losing 136-113 to the Bucks. Portland won. Seattle beat the Bulls. Jordan must not have played because Orlando Woolridge led in scoring for the Bulls. And the Celtics win in Washington, 88-73. Danny
Ainge. I don't know. I saw a meme that Jordan never sat, and LeBron's a big pussy, so I don't think he missed that game.
That's right. And Danny Ainge led the Celtics with 20 points, which means Bird probably didn't play. And
they all played every game. It's only LeBron, that big giant vagina that sits all the time. These legends of my heyday didn't sit. I don't even have to fact check it. I can just make memes that they all played every game, no matter what the age or situation.
Exactly. Oh, God.
All these loser pampered bitches today. They're the ones that sit.
That's right. Celtics won 88-273. That is only one more note on the report this evening. It was one day before we can officially say now, JR. It was one day before, on November 1st, 1985, that we lost. The wrestling world lost the great Quick Draw Rick McGraw. He died the day before at the age of 30.
Good run.
And we all know why. So
yes. Covered extensively. Poor McGraw. We just saw him with his wife, all happy about his wedding, and then quick downward spiral from there. So let's head back to the Hershey Park Arena, where Mean Gene is in the aisle chatting with Randy Savage and Elizabeth to talk about his big intercontinental title match here tonight, Scott. Gene asks why he chose a woman manager. And Savage calls him stupid. Liz says she has always loved sports and is here to help Randy. Savage says he's ready to go and tells Gene not to ask him questions like that again. And that, of course, leads us to that big intercontinental title match, Randy Savage challenging Tito Santana. Savage continues to rise up the ladder into a big IC title shot against Chico on a major show like this. Really good choice and fit for both guys. Vince said the crowd is behind Tito tonight, but Jesse says Macho is stronger and faster and that Chico's belt is in jeopardy. We open with a tight lockup as Savage takes over and kicks and knees away at the champ. Savage slings him to the buckle but whiffs on an elbow, allowing Tito to hit a hip toss. Savage dodges an elbow and hits an axe blow off the middle rope for two. Savage then grabs a side headlock as the crowd tries to fire up Tito. Savage fights to his feet, Santana fights his feet, but Savage pelts him with an elbow and drops him with a slam. Macho heads up to the top rope, but Tito catches him with a punch on the way down and then buries a knee lift and a flurry of kicks as he builds momentum. Tito keeps firing away until Savage finally bails to the floor. Tito follows him out, and we get a wild brawl that ends at a double countout. A great appetizer for what would jumpstart a feud eventually, continue to establish Savage as a top player. I thought this was great pacing, great heat here, Scott. Savage really came across as a top-notch athlete, as always. A really fun match, and again, a showcase for Savage, who's climbing up the ladder quickly, and he goes toe-to-toe with Tito into the wild brawl. So I thought this was really well done. It was just enough here to set us up for future, continued matches on the road with these two. I went 2 stars, and again, Savage just comes across as he's come across as such a massive star since his debut.
I agree with you 100%. I like 2 stars as well. Actually, no, I'll make it 2.5. That's how much I really enjoyed this match. It was a lot of fun. Savage is clearly a guy that is just burgeoning for the big time. No doubt about it. I agree with you 100%. He's a star. I almost feel like Tito looks like he was kind of swallowed up here, you know? Like Tito just doesn't seem to – I mean, and look, this is not a knock on Tito. Tremendous worker, one of the WWF's Hall of Fame studs, Intercontinental Champion, Tag Team Champion. But when he's in the ring – this is just my opinion. When he's in the ring – with Savage, he just looks outclassed on a
is that ever on Savage though? I feel like no one has looked to be in Savage's league. Anyone he's been in the ring with since he started seems to be like they could even hang. Like he just overshadows everybody. He feels like such a star. The presentation, the entrance, the robe, Elizabeth, the way he works the match. I mean, he just feels like he's above everything else. Like, we haven't seen him with Hogan yet, so we'll see. But right now, anyone he's fought, and I think you're right. I think he does. He almost makes Tito feel like a relic. I mean, Tito was a guy we watched earlier in the year that was on fire having these matches with Valentine. And then you look here, and he's like, Savage is just running circles around him, which is crazy because Tito is such a great worker.
Right.
And I'm sure we'll see future matches where maybe that balances out a bit more. But for right now, it feels like Tito is just... not up, like I agree with you. Not up to maybe Savage's speed. Like Savage is just flying around the play, around the ring. He feels like a huge star. Like if they would have switched the title here, it would have felt completely fine, like normal. What do you think of how quickly they pumped Savage up? I mean, did he force their hands, or do you think they would have anyway?
No, I don't think they would have forced their hands. I think it was okay to kind of slowly percolate. I mean, Tito didn't.
No, but has he forced their hand? Is what I'm saying. Because they're pushing him way up the ladder. Do you think they planned this, or do you think because he's such a star and has been so great that they accelerated it?
I think it's a bit of both. I think they knew he was going to be a star. I just didn't think it would, I don't think it would have been this soon. I think he was due to be the heel that beat Tito for the Intercontinental title. I just didn't think they would do it when they did it, which we'll get to down the line. Like on this show, he almost looked like the babyface. Like you said, like we've been saying, he looked like, I mean, obviously he's the heel, but he looked like the guy everybody wanted to see, and Tito was just like this other guy. And again, we've been talking about Tito. He's an awesome worker. The feud with Valentine was fantastic. He just looks old, and he doesn't fit. Savage just overwhelms him with his charisma. It's unfortunate, but I think from this point forward, you kind of knew where the Intercontinental title situation was going when we get to 1986. And what the deal was. This match showed that, in my opinion. But I'm going to give it 2.5. I actually really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I think Tito can hang with Savage. They're both tremendous workers. It's not like Tito had to be carried or anything. It's just Tito looks like an old school, you know, Titans of Wrestling relic from the early 80s as compared to Savage. Savage is just a new star. He's just a new, fresh star. And tonight proved that. And you'll see more of it throughout the year. And even like, you know, when we get to these backstage segments with the Halloween competition, he even looks like he's just part of the, you know, like he's in Hogan's class. He's in JYD's class. He's, you know, he's only been here 6 months, but I feel like he's lapped some of the other heels. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
He might even have lapped. I mean, I think that's why Greg Valentine went to the tag team. I think he even lapped Valentine.
Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, we'll even see it on our next show. Next week, the way he's presented throughout that show. I mean, he just comes across as a star. There's no other way to say it other than he looks and feels like a star.
Absolutely.
The music, the robes, Elizabeth, you know, no one else had a female manager like that really at this point, like a beautiful young female manager. So, I mean, that makes him stand out. He's so fast in the ring, so crisp in the ring, unique way of speaking, great promo. I mean, just had the whole full package. I mean, just he had everything you want. You know, he's a smaller guy, but he's jacked. You know, like, this is everything he could want in a potential heel star and eventual face star is right there.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the closest would be, I guess, Sonny, not Sonny. Sonny in World Class. She was managing, right. She was managing Jimmy Garvin, pre-Precious.
Sunshine.
I'm sorry. Sunshine. She was, I think that's the closest you came to.
Well, I'm talking about even just in WWF, like no one on that, in that, because they don't really acknowledge the outside world. So, I mean, no one in this world has had that female manager situation like Savage had. So it immediately makes him stand out as unique that he's got this hot woman toting, you know, he's toting around. Like, it just makes him seem like such a baller, you know, like just out there, like, you know, he doesn't have the 90-year-old Arnold Skaalin in his corner. He doesn't have the fat
Grand Wizard
Albano. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't, you know, he's got this hot chick with him. He doesn't have these other, you know, even Heenan. I mean, I don't know. He doesn't have like this slimy, weaselly guy with him, or this midget Jimmy Hart. Like, you know, he's got this real hot babe alongside with him. Like, it just shows like a whole nother level of confidence. Yeah, it just makes him stand out so much more than everyone else.
I mean, really, right now, the trinity of heels, because I think as we really are dissecting these shows and really talking about this roster, from a 1985 standard, because most heels are a bunch of, you know, old, fat, wormy-looking pussies, we've seen three. I mean, I would have loved to see them as kind of a faction almost. Piper, Jesse, and fucking Savage. Right. Maybe three of the greatest heels in the company right now. Maybe three of the greatest heels in the business right now. And they're just so cool, you know, and you never would think that now that we're, you know, dissecting and analyzing it again, how fucking cool they are, all three of them.
And I'd even argue Jesse's been more valuable on commentary than he ever was as a wrestler to them. I mean, because he's there to put over everything and tie himself into all these stars. Again, we'll see it next week with him and Savage. Like, he ties himself into them. You know, he's still putting himself over like a wrestler, but he's also putting over all the storylines of wrestlers. And his voice is so consistent on these shows and such a great heel that I think he's, you know, You could argue he'd be more lost in the shuffle if he was just another heel on the heel roster, only because he was so limited in the ring that he had a ceiling. Whereas here, he's the top dog when it comes to commentators. So it helped keep that balance where I think he would have gotten overshadowed a lot if he was still in the ring.
Exactly, and they just come off as so badass, and they do make these babyface characters we've seen just seem very archaic.
Unless you're
Hogan, Andre, or even Junkyard Dog, you're like behind the eight ball. The heels are just better right now.
Yes, but I kind of agree, but I also kind of think it's probably the best time in company history that they've had these defined face and heel roles where both sides are super, super strong. I mean,
yes, I agree.
You're saying, besides so-and-so, but you still named like five guys. I mean, besides Hogan.
Well, yeah, no, of course.
But you got Steamboat as well. You got a lot of great faces and a lot of great heels. It's such a time where there's such strong delineation, but both sides are super balanced and super strong. They're both presented very strongly. The heels aren't idiots. They're not pussies. The faces aren't idiots. They're not pussies. The heels aren't all cowards. You've got tough guy heels. And it's a good mix. I mean, you got Bundy and Stud, too, on the heel side. So, I mean, you got so much good depth on both sides of the coin. And all these guys are established and built, even into the tag teams. Like, the British Bulldogs are quickly working their way to the ladder. So, I mean, there's so many, such good diversity on both ends of the card. It's really an impressive time in company history when you look at roster construction. There's been times where you could argue there's a deeper roster, like in the ring. Like a 2000 or whatever. But when you look at construction, face versus heel, depth of character, like this has to be one of the peak years for them.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, Vince, obviously, the repercussions and reverberations from WrestleMania have shown throughout the whole year. And sure, they got their share of jobbers and everything, but they just got some spot. The top part of the roster right now is just so good in so many ways. And sure, it's easy to say, you guys are thinking 2017 standards. No. Even back then, Savage was cool and Jesse was cool. Mm-hmm. Look at earlier in the year with Hammer. I mean, him with his fucking hot wife oiling him up on TNT. I mean, yes. He was the fucking Mac Daddy, for Christ's sakes. I mean, the heels are not. I think now that we look back,
I didn't even mention Morocco either. He's another guy that's been presented as a cool guy. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, I don't know, JR. I feel like we're almost kind of changing up the veneer of what 1985 WWF was. We have defined faces and heels. We most certainly do. However, you look back and 2017 fans go, yeah, I love this certain heel or this heel. You're saying that in 2017 that you loved them, but you had to have loved them back then to love them now. And I don't think that's an accident. And I think Vince needs to be applauded for that, even at this time where he was still in kayfabe. He wasn't trying to make the heels cool. They just were. Mm. Nobody showed Savage how to be Savage.
Right.
He was just fucking Savage.
Yeah.
Same thing with Jesse.
Well, they were given the leeway to go do that stuff.
Right.
He was allowed to just go be Randy Savage. Roddy Piper was allowed to go out there and be Roddy Piper.
Exactly.
Jesse was allowed to be Jesse on commentary. I mean, these guys were all, Bobby Heenan was allowed to go out there and be Bobby Heenan, quick wit comedy guy. So, I mean, they're allowed the reins to go out there and be what they had developed and worked on.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know we're getting a lot into this match, but I think this is a perfect example of how Vince set up his company to be this kind of, I mean, you go to all these territories, World Class, you were supposed to love the Von Erichs, fuck the Freebirds. You were supposed to love my kids. And no one gives a shit about these stupid, rednecks from Georgia. Or AWA, you don't boo Vern. Or you don't boo fucking his stupid kid and the fucking Jake Milliman and freaking Buck Zumoff. No, you're supposed to cheer them and you're supposed to boo, Bockwinkel and all those guys, or any of these other promotions. But WWF, I feel like even this early on, Vince is telling you, look, these guys are going to be your heroes. These guys are going to be your villains. But whoever you like is who you like. And I don't think any – and that was, I think, one of the reasons why he took over the wrestling business, because he gave the fans this buffet of talent and personalities and charisma that all the other promoters did not want you to do. I'm going to talk – next time we have Kelly on, I'm going to bring that up to him. I'm curious what he thinks, because you know, when him and the guys, I mean, they did 79 to 83. Now, Vince Sr. was different. Bob Backlund, your champion. You don't get to cheer Stan Hansen. No, you do not cheer Superstar. That's why do you think on the Superstar Billy Graham doc, he was all pissed off that he didn't get a chance to – he wanted to turn face. That's revolutionary for 1978. But Vince Sr.'s like, no. The college wrestler, he's the star. He's clean cut. You know, he's not a jerk like you. Yeah, but I'm a jerk, but I'm cool. No. Heels are not supposed to be cool. But Vince Jr. figured that out. So even though you had a line in the sand, no pun intended, you had your baby faces and your heels. And like you said, even on this show tonight, on the Halloween segments, you have your faces, you have your heels. But you're not like, oh, boo Iron Sheik, boo Nikolai Volkov. I'm like, wow, they actually dress like Batman and Robin, and they have an S and a fucking V. That's cool. I bet you I even said that in 1985. I mean, that's – Vince just figured out, look, I'm going to give you a roster of great talent and great personalities. They are some are going to be really nice and some are going to be real creeps.
But don't you think Crockett was doing this too, though?
Oh, no doubt. Well, the problem with Crockett was, other than Dusty, the babyfaces were morons.
Yeah.
I'll go into it, but I know Chad will disagree, and I'll get into wars with those guys. And I'm fine. I'm ready for it. I loved all the heels in Crockett. The only baby faces I liked were the Road Warriors and Dusty to a certain extent. But Dusty actually kind of like a – you know, watching a lot of these interviews when we get to our network adventures, and, you know, we have taught – you know, some are listening now, besides yourself, of course. You're going to see like, wow, Dusty was actually – some of his promos, he was a little dickish too. No doubt about it. There was something cool – well, plus, he was the opposite of Vince in that his world champion was a heel. And sure, you're supposed to boo him, but I mean, it's fucking Flair, man. I mean, you can or you can't, you know. And you see those studio shots, and all those guys are dressed in suits. Now, the Horseman thing doesn't come at this stage of the game. They're not for another, you know, 6 months. They don't really start being Horsemen, quote, until like March or April of 86. But the difference there was the baby faces were still cool in WWF. Other than Dusty, I can't jump on any baby. I couldn't. It was very hard. I was not a Magnum TA guy. I didn't really like. I mean, I know I've already gotten in plenty of arguments with people about Ronnie Garvin. But the only other baby faces I liked in Crockett were the Road Warriors because they were cool. Vince found a way to really hype and promote this roster. Yes, there's a line in the sand. These guys you cheer, these guys you boo. But when they're standalone, if you want to like them, I'm all for you liking them. And I think that is what made Vince a revolutionary and why all these other promoters didn't get it. And that's why they went belly up. Because they didn't give the fans the opportunity to think for themselves. Fritz wanted you to vote root for his fucking kids and fuck Michael Hayes and fuck Terry Gordy and all the – well, I like the Freebirds. I like his kids. I like the Von Erichs. It's a great feud. That's why it was one of the greatest feuds of all time. Vince figured it out. And that's why we're sitting here loving Savage, loving Piper, and loving Jesse. Because even though they're creeps, and in the end we'll end up booing them and we want the good baby faces to win unless they're hillbillies, there's a reason why we like them, because Vince gave them creative license that he normally wouldn't – that other promoters did not give other heels. That's what it comes down to, JR. These other promoters did not give their heels the – and that includes Vince Sr. – did not give their heels the rope. Or he didn't loosen their leash like Vince Jr. did. That's the difference. And that's why we love Savage and love Jesse and love Bobby and love Jesse and, you know, love Piper. Because we booed them, but we loved them at the same time. Where these other promotions, that's not how it worked. Crockett's an interesting case. And again, I'm looking forward when we have Kelly on again. I want to ask him that too, what he thinks of that dynamic as well. But that's why we love Savage and Jesse and Piper and those kind of guys, because Vince wanted us to. That's why he promoted them as such and gave them the creativity, the leeway that Fritz and Vern and, you know, some of these other promoters did not, or even, I mean, definitely not, his name just went out of my head, Jim Watts, you know what I mean? Or, I did that on purpose. Even Bill Watts in Mid-South. You were cheering for Terry Taylor. You were cheering for Butch Reed, and you're cheering for the JYD. You were booing Duggan when he was a heel. You were booing DiBiase because he wanted you to. So, anyway, looking forward to talking to Kelly about that in the next show, see what his thoughts are. In any event, it was a great discussion there, and Tito retains his Intercontinental title. On a side note, was it weird? And I know he had the belt for the specific belt for another like 8 months, but it was weird seeing Tito with the modern belt.
Mm.
Just didn't seem right to him. It was the green belt, just like Valentine. Yeah. Very weird. Any event.
Back to Saturday Night Event number 10. By the time you finish that rant,
sorry. It's a great topic. It's a great subject.
No, it is. It was good. It was a good discussion. So speaking of fun, cool heels, we're going to head to Roddy Piper's home in a moment. First, we get quick clips of Mr. Fuji and Ricky Steamboat practicing their kung fu before a break. Then we head to Piper's home to see how he spent Halloween. Piper's prepping his treats for kids as Vince McMahon just shows up at his house to chat. Vince asks him how he spent Halloween in his native Scotland, leading to some racist mannerisms from Piper about natives. He's like, I'm not a native. I don't have a ring in my nose. You know, like, comparing the word native just to African natives, I guess. Piper's looking to gain revenge on... What?
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he did. Piper's looking to gain revenge on trick-or-treaters, so he loads up packages with bricks and bowling balls as tricks for the kids. The kids arrive, and Piper welcomes them in. One's dressed as Hulk Hogan. Piper talks some shit and then slams... It still makes me laugh right there. He slams the bricks and bowling balls through the fucking candy bags to knock all the candy out by busting holes in the bag and then steals it all. The kids leave and celebrate outside. They reveal that Piper... actually stole chocolate-covered chili peppers. Back inside, Piper eats all the candy. His mouth is lit on fire, and he leads to him chucking water from a vase to kill all the heat in his mouth. So, a classic segment. I like Vince trolling him, randomly showing up in his house. You know, the goal of Piper to steal candy from kids on Halloween is great heel stuff. And the vase thing.
Tremendous.
The vase thing gets me every time, too. That's a great spot right there. He drinks the water, throws the flowers out, and drinks the fucking dirty dirt water.
Yep, absolutely tremendous. Oh, so is this castle like the ones in Scotland that have no indoor plumbing? What, do you run back and forth from the outhouse?
I still swear that's probably Vince's house, right, that they're in. I mean, that's how I feel. I think it was Vince's house.
It probably was. It was definitely in Greenwich or Westchester or the hell he lived.
Yeah, it's poor Fink's house. Or Fink probably lived in a closet somewhere.
He probably lived in Vince's closet, probably. He probably lived in the boathouse behind the pool.
So backstage, Vince is chatting with Hulk Hogan, who's yucking it up over the tricks that Piper, the kids played on Piper, so he's all having a good time there. Gene then visits Mr. Fuji, who demonstrates how he breaks a board, and then he talks to Ricky Steamboat in the aisle. Get the footage of Fuji and Morocco assaulting and hanging the dragon that started this whole feud. Steamboat says, tonight, Fuji will feel the dragon. This match, again, a continuation of a feud between Steamboat and Fuji and Morocco. Back on July 9th, Steamboat was double-teamed after a match. It was hung from the top rope. And on the October 19th Piper's Pit, Fuji issued the challenge here for a kung fu match on Saturday night's main event. A good way to keep the feud simmering gets Fuji further involved. He's been constantly getting mixed up anyway physically. Steamboat gets a huge pop as he arrives down Morocco's with Fuji decked out in a Hawaiian shirt. Vince talks about the rules in this one as we get underway, and both men circle each other in karate stances, teasing strikes until Steamboat starts to unload chops. Fuji recovers and regroups, eventually knocking Steamboat just shy of the groin and then dropping a headbutt to the gut. Fuji unloads a chop and a kick, but Steamboat kicks his way back into control, mixing in some elbows. Fuji lands a shot to the gut and digs his fingers into Steamboat's chin before beeling him over in a ridiculous-looking kung fu movie spot. Yes. Fuji keeps laying in strikes, but Steamboat blocks a suplex and hits one of his own. Steamboat heads up top and hits a missile dropkick to get the win. Morocco hops in the ring and spews mist in Steamboat's face, followed by a big double-team beatdown. The in-ring action, really nothing special, but they kept it entertaining enough. It was brief and kept chugging along. I really liked the finish, too. I thought it was a smart way to you know, keep the feud going. It was a, you know, the finish to the post-bell action was good, especially the mist. I like that, too. It was a nice touch. I thought the feud's been great. This was a good way to showcase it for Saturday's main event and keep it brewing for the house show circuit. I went a half a star just for everything going on in this one.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't tremendous. And, I mean, you know, Steamboat did the best he could with what he had. I mean, Fuji's still kind of in moderately decent wrestling shape, but... I mean, I'd rather see Morocco and Morocco and Steamboat, obviously. But I did like the missed shot. That was kind of cool, actually. I'd forgotten that had happened. Believe it or not, after the 463 times I've watched this, I totally forgot about the missed shot. I totally forgot about that. I'll give it a half star as well. Nothing crazy, and at least I know that the feud is continuing.
Right.
Obviously, the missed shot keeps the feud going on, so I'm very happy about that. So.
Agree.
So, all right. And now it's time to break the tie, JR, in our holiday competition.
There we go. Backstage where Gene is with the whole crew for the final challenge, the pumpkin pass. Gene said, and Liz demonstrate the game for us, and then we take a break. After commercial, everyone's backstage, Scott. Everyone that we've seen in the show today, back in their costumes, including Vince and Jesse, who gives us this.
Well, that didn't surprise me a bit, because Lou Albano is a big, fat, sloppy pig.
One of the most iconic lines in WWF history, as Jesse Ventura expresses no surprise that Lou Albano won that pie-eating contest.
But you're going to say the most iconic lines in Place to Be podcast history, because that is also true.
A classic, if you listen to
old
episodes.
Well, that didn't surprise me a bit, because Lou Albano is a big, fat, sloppy pig.
As a matter of fact, if you listen to episodes 1 through 60, that was the only sound of the clip we had. So
yes, you heard that one quite a bit. Yes, iconic line there. They recap the events, bringing us to the 1-1 tie. The contest kicks off. We get in the faces, get 5 passes until Albano drops the pumpkin right before the finish. He does that weird thing where he's like shaking as he's trying to hold it. He sucks so bad.
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, I've come to enjoy him a little bit through the TNTs, and there's still times where I can't stand him, but I'm coming around. So the heels go, they cheat again, but Liz botches the pass and costs her team the win after 4 passes. So the faces win 5-4. That leads Piper and Savage to berate Liz about the loss, just screaming at her. And then Jesse rants and raves over everything as the heels keep arguing. And then we take a break, come back, and Vince, Jesse, and Gene wrap up the show. And Jesse reminds us of his challenge for the next Saturday Night's Main Event, him and Piper versus the Hillbillies.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I just absolutely cannot. I never thought I'd look more forward to a hillbilly match in my life than that one.
That's it, Scott. Segment event in the books. Let's go ahead to our awards and see where we're at with these.
The awards.
So match of the night. Not much to choose from here on this evening. I went with Santana and Savage.
Yeah, I go with that as well. I enjoyed it a lot.
Which stinks. I really wanted to go with the Hogan and Andre, but it just, I don't know. I'm just disappointed a little bit.
No, it didn't sit as good as it should have. It didn't, even for 8 minutes, definitely not as good as it should have been. I go with Santana Savage as well.
All right, time for the Drizzler, the worst match of the night. You know, not really their fault. They weren't really set up to succeed, but I want Steamboat Fuji.
Yeah, and when do we ever say that about a Steamboat match? But they just didn't have any time to do anything.
Right, and you know, it wasn't designed that way. So MVP of the night, I went with a tie between Roddy Piper and Jesse Ventura.
Yes. Two greatest ever.
Jesse's like always going to be involved in these Saturday Night's Main Event MVPs, and his Piper's there too. He's probably going to be as well.
Yes.
But they were fantastic here, both all throughout the night, backstage, on the mic, in the ring. Everything they did was fantastic. The Gator Wolf Award, Scott, this is the worst worker of the night. I went with Cousin Junior, even though he didn't wrestle a match. He still fucked up the one bump he had to take, and he sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I won't even give it to Fuji. I think Cousin Junior is 100 times worse than Mr. Fuji in the ring. So
I agree with you 100%.
To me, even if he doesn't wrestle, if Cousin Junior is on the fucking show, he's the worst worker to me.
I agree 100%.
Best moment, I give it a tie here as well. I went with Piper shoving Junior because I love it, and the fat sloppy pig.
Oh, it's definitely the fat. I mean, I would give all of it to the fat sloppy pig, but if you want to split it, that's I'm perfectly fine with that. As long as the fat sloppy pig gets in there.
All right. And our Junior Mr. Universe Award for the most juiced up steroid guy, I went with Hogan on this night. I thought he was clearly jacked up and ready to roll.
Yes.
No one else really. I don't think anyone's really challenged him on this night. It was
and that's without the Hercules. And that's without the Hercules. Right. Fucking gold. Fucking thing or whatever the hell he had on.
Yeah, I didn't think Hercules, there was a ton of ton of competition for him this evening.
No, and he's won 2 of the last 3. Sadly, we will not call it the Rick McGraw Award anymore. God rest his soul. He won it the first time way back in January, and he won it again in September.
Right.
So there you go. But Hogan has now won 2 of the last 3 Junior Mr. Universe Awards.
All right, and finally, our final grade of the evening, Scott. I went with a 6.
I'll give it a 6.5.
Okay.
I'll give the half star bump from you because, just Gorilla Jesse and Piper were just fucking amazing. And Savage just was
Yeah, you know, I'll go 6.5. I mean, I think it's one of the best Saturday Night's Main Events. Just from, you know, for one that doesn't have a, you know, there'll be future ones that are great because they have high quality matches. This was probably one of the best that doesn't have a, you know, high quality match. So yeah, I'll go 6.5.
Right.
It's pretty good. All right, that'll do it for this week's Vintage Vault, this week's Place to Be podcast. Scott, we're not sure when we're recording the next one, but it should air hopefully on Monday, a week from tonight. It'll be the Wrestling Classic. I think third time we broke that one down.
I think so, too. I think it's definitely third time we've done this, too.
But yeah, it'll be fun to talk about that again since we've been watching all these shows in order. So it'll be a good thing to check out. Of course, we will have main event this week, or no? We'll wait until next week, right?
No, we are going to be on hiatus because we're skipping a week because like Clotheslines and Headlines, it is Mania week next week, so we're going to have a big mega main event preview next week. So look out for that. As of course is JR, Clotheslines and Headlines, correct?
Yeah, we have a big one. Our buddy Pete will be joining us because he's going to all of the non WWE shows in addition to WrestleMania, so he'll break that down. We're going to basically preview the whole weekend. We're going to preview all the WWN shows. We're going to preview the NXT, WrestleMania itself. So we're going to, that's pretty much going to be the whole show as it's running through that weekend with Pete and then maybe one or two other guests. We'll see. But if you didn't check out last week's Clothesline Headlines, that was a great episode as well. We actually had the new Ring of Honor champion, Christopher Daniels, was on for a chat with Steve Willey. Great conversation there. Talked to Alan Blackstock, who broke down the WXW 16 Carat show in Germany from a couple weeks ago. We also looked WWE, I should say. We had Mr. D'Amato was on, talking a little, breaking out Fastlane, previewing Mania a bit. Glenn had some interesting takes on potential AJ Styles WrestleMania opponents that would be better than Shane McMahon. So there's a lot going on, some Shikara talk as well. So check that out from last week. Each and every day, Scott, leading up to Mania, we are doing our WrestleMania List of Mania, 33 lists in total. I believe tomorrow's day 21. So if you haven't checked all those out, be sure you go ahead and do so. A lot to enjoy and dive into and digest there as well. And, of course, our network adventure continues each and every Wednesday, our Vintage Vault Refresh series, which is part of our ebooks, which you can download for free on the right-hand side, PlaceMania.com. And, of course, if you're going to be shopping on Amazon, PlaceMania.com/Amazon for all of your needs right there. It takes you right to Amazon. You have to do nothing else. Facebook.com/PlaceMania, Twitter, Place2Nation as well. Any final parting shots, Scotty?
No, it was another great show, JR, and looking forward to going to Chi-Town, to Chicago, for the Wrestling Classic, because, again, now that we're doing all these shows leading up to it, it actually a different kind of frame of reference for that show. Looking forward to it.
All right, there you go. All right, so we'll be back next week. It'll be our final one before Mania. Again, if you are going to WrestleMania and you want to be part of the huge PTBN tailgate, just reach out to us on social media. We'll make sure we get you involved. It's going to be happening. It was a great time last year, and as Mr. Nick Duke has said, this will be bigger, badder, and better. So be sure you join us in the Orlando parking lot of the Citrus Bowl this 2 weeks.
And hopefully for him, not completely forgettable.
So there you go. All right, we're out. We'll talk to you next week. Everyone take care. Know that motherfucker will. What you gonna do now? Whatever I wanna do. Gosh, it's cool now. Now I'm gonna do nice and new now. Then you motherfucker really, really need to cool out. Cause you'll never get on top of this. So mommy, best advice is just to get on top of this. Have you ever had sex with a pharaoh? I put the pussy in a sarcophagus. Now she claiming that I bruise her esophagus. Head of the class and she just want a scholarship. I'm living in the future, so the present is my past. My presence is a present, kiss my ass. Gossip, gossip, nigga, just stop it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. Profit, profit, nigga, I get it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. I'ma need to see your fucking hands. Sasquatch, Godzilla, King Kong, Loch Ness, Goblin, Ghoul, a zombie with no conscience. Question, what do these things all have in common? Everybody knows I'm a motherfucking monster. Conquer, stomp you, stop your silly nonsense. Nonsense, none of you niggas know where the swamp is. None of you niggas have seen the carnage that I've seen. I still hear fiends scream in my dreams. Murder, murder in black convertibles. I kill a block, I murder the avenues. I rape and pillage a village, women and children. Everybody wanna know what my Achilles heel is. Love, I don't.
don't get enough of it. All I get is these vampires and bloodsuckers. All I see is these niggas I made millionaires, milling about, spilling their feelings in the air. All I see is these fake fucks with no fangs, trying to draw blood from my ice cold veins. I smell a massacre, seems to be the only way to back you back.
Nigga, just stop it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. Profit, profit, nigga, I got it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. I'ma need to see your fucking hands.
Pull up in a monster automobile gangster with a bad bitch that came from Sri Lanka. Yeah, I'm in a tanker, color a Willy Wonka.